These attackers stood right where you are. They rifled through your desks and they desecrated this place.
If you are looking for something, as they say, completely different, check in on Happy Times.
On Saturday, January 30th, I awoke to news that Grammy-nominated Scottish musician Sophie had died in an accident in Athens. When I told my producer I wanted to do a segment in honor of her, his response was, "Who?"
Lemonade, lemonade.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Gay Chechen refugees are abducted from their Russian safe house. An Israeli-American comedy horror film is on the dinner menu. And a fond farewell to transgressive electronic music star Sophie. All that and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm Paula Thomas.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 13, 2021. The abduction of two young refugees from the anti-queer pogrom has put the Russian region of Chechnya back in the news. Seized from a safe house about 400 kilometers east of Moscow, the 17 and 20-year-old brothers were handed over to Chechenian security agents on February 4th. According to the Russian LGBT network, they were taken to their hometown of Gudermais, just outside Grozny, the Chechen capital. The network helped the brothers escape Chechnya in June 2020. They were among the refugees featured in the multi-award-winning documentary Welcome to Chechnya. They had been charged with running a government opposition channel on the messaging app Telegram. They endured months of detention and torture in what have been called secret queer concentration camps, and were released after recording a coerced confession. Lawyers for the two brothers are being told they're witnesses in an old criminal case, but are not themselves being charged. One of the lawyers asked why they could not have simply been deposed at their Russian apartment instead of being abducted and taken back to Chechnya. There was no answer. Russian LGBT network spokesperson Tim Bestvit told the Moscow Times that the young men are tired and frightened and being pressured to refuse a lawyer. He warned that they are in mortal danger.
Going back to 2017, independent journalists have been confirming what both the Chechen and Russian governments have vehemently denied, that suspected LGBTQ people were being rounded up, beaten, and tortured to reveal the names of their friends. It's not known how many people have died during interrogation. Chechen President Ramzan Kadyrov has claimed that there are no LGBTQ people in Chechnya, and the ongoing vicious crackdown seems to be an effort to make his wish come true. Previous sanctions by the UK and US government against Kadyrov and his allies have seemingly had no effect. Recently installed, openly gay US State Department spokesperson Ned Price addressed the situation in Chechnya during his daily briefing this week. He told reporters that the Biden administration is profoundly concerned about the two brothers. President Biden was at the State Department calling for global LGBTQ rights the same day that they were abducted.
Drag queens are a visible presence among the thousands protesting last week's military coup in Myanmar. Huge demonstrations on the streets of the capital city of Yangon are demanding the return of democratically elected President Aung San Suu Kyi. Even though consensual adult gay sex is still a crime under old colonial-era laws, The Guardian reports that the most flamboyant drag queens have nevertheless been applauded by other protesters. 21-year-old Min Kent goes by the stage name Walkie Talkie. He told the news outlet, "People on the marches tell us we should have our rights. They're proud of us. LGBT are protesting in their heels and waving rainbow flags across Myanmar." The former British colony of Burma has been embroiled in ethnic conflict for decades, but The Guardian notes the military coup has united disparate factions in opposition to the takeover across the country. Strangers flash three-finger salute signs of resistance to the junta. Truck drivers offer free rides to the demonstrations. Volunteers keep the protesters hydrated under the hot sun while others share food. Even members of the depressed Muslim Rohingya minority are being welcomed. They've been targeted in the genocidal military crackdown since 2017, a human rights crisis the government of Aung San Suu Kyi has failed to address. Drag queen Kant admits that fighting a new military dictatorship will be a difficult task, but says that we all know what we're facing. We ask that the world help us. And he hopes LGBTQ involvement in the protests will make us more accepted.
The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development is assuring LGBTQ people that federal law specifically protects them from housing discrimination. Their February 11th press release affirms the Biden administration's desire to eradicate bias based on sexual orientation and gender identity in all agencies of the federal government. The administration, in turn, is standing on the 2020 Bostock v. Clayton County Supreme Court ruling. It said that federal law protects LGBTQ people from discrimination in the workplace. The HUD press release concludes that the Fair Housing Act sex discrimination provisions are comparable in text and purpose to that ruling. Janine M. Warden is the Acting Assistant Secretary of the Office of Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity. She said in the release that every person should be able to secure a roof over their head free from discrimination, and the action we are taking today will move us closer to that goal. By contrast, Trump's Housing Secretary Ben Carson infamously expressed concerns about big hairy men trying to find space in women's shelters.
Newly inaugurated Gay Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg is bringing gay Navajo Arizona State Representative Orlando Teller onto his staff as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Tribal Affairs. He previously served as Deputy Director of the Navajo Department of Transportation and was a member of the state legislature's Indigenous Peoples and LGBTQ caucuses. Teller was active in Biden's presidential campaign. He even got to introduce Cher at a fundraising concert. He said at the time, "I was actually trying to be calm. Inside, I was a screaming queen, just giddy as all get out." His paternal grandfather was one of the famous Native American code talkers who helped disseminate critical military information undecipherable to the Axis during World War II. Teller is the second member of the Navajo Nation to join the Biden cabinet, while Leah Johns was named director of the Office of Indian Energy in the U.S. Department of Transportation. The Navajo Times quoted Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez saying, "Words cannot express how proud we are of these two young Navajo professionals." Teller told the Blade newspaper that elevating indigenous nations by the Biden administration only invigorates and encourages me to do more. Representation matters. The new deputy assistant secretary is currently recovering from COVID-19 and working from home after being hospitalized last year. He lost his mother to the pandemic in December.
The issue of transgender girls participating in school sports is roiling in a few U.S. states. Some lawmakers claim that trans girls should be banned based on their alleged advantage over cisgender girls. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki responded in no uncertain terms during one of her daily briefings this week. The loaded questions about the controversy came from a Fox Radio News reporter.
Does the president have a message for local school officials on dealing with these kind of disputes that are already starting to arise? Between trans girls who are competing and cis girls in a level playing field, particularly in high school sports when it leads to college scholarships. Is there any kind of messaging or clarification that the White House wants to give on the executive order?
I would just say that the president's belief is that trans rights are human rights, and that's why he signed that executive order. And in terms of the determinations by universities and colleges, I would certainly defer to them.
That was White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
Finally, the government of New Zealand is celebrating LGBTQ pride in an especially festive way. New Zealand Post has issued a progress stamp combining different multicolored pride flags. It also marks the 35th anniversary of the passage of the Homosexual Reform Act that decriminalized same-gender sex. The progress stamp was created by Daniel Kazar. He combined the original rainbow pride flag designed by Gilbert Baker in 1978 with the pink, blue, and white colors of the trans pride flag created by Monica Helms in 1999. Then he added black and brown stripes from the More Color, More Pride flag designed by Amber Hikes to highlight racism within queer communities. The stamp is available online at nzpost.co.nz. Sweden became the first country to issue a rainbow pride flag stamp in 2016, Spain issued a special stamp to celebrate Pride Month in 2020. The release of the Pride stamp in New Zealand coincides with the celebration of Auckland Pride throughout the month of February and Wellington Pride during the last 2 weeks of March. With the victories of 13 out candidates in October's national elections, Kiwis are rightfully claiming the title queerest parliament on the planet.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending February 13th, 2021. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. It's written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Joe Bainline. Stay healthy.
And I'm Paula Thomas. Stay safe.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump evaded convictions for the second time on February 13th, but no one blames the case presented to the Senate by the House impeachment managers. Gay Rhode Island Representative David Cicilline was the lead sponsor of the article, charging Trump with incitement of insurrection. His stellar opening argument was one of the trial's high points. Here's a sample.
The President of the United States sided with the insurrectionists. He celebrated their cause. He validated their attack. He told them, remember this day forever. Hours after they marched through these halls looking to assassinate Vice President Pence, the Speaker of the House, and any of us they could find. People died. People were brutally injured. And President Trump is singularly responsible for inciting it. These attackers stood right where you are. They went on that rostrum. They rifled through your desks and they desecrated this place. And literally, the president sat delighted, doing nothing to help us, calling one of you to pressure you to stop the certification. It can't be that the commander-in-chief can incite a lawless, bloody insurrection and then utterly fail in his duty as commander-in-chief to defend us from the attack, to defend our law enforcement officers from that attack, and just get away with it. Donald Trump abdicated his duty to us all. We have to make this right. And you can make it right.
That was Representative David Cicilline. The Senate found Trump guilty by a vote of 57 to 43, falling 10 votes short of the supermajority needed to convict him.
True to her spirituality, she had climbed up to watch the full moon and accidentally slipped and fell. Oh, just
like we never said goodbye. We say goodbye to an icon of trans liberation, but never to her music. Later in the program.
And now for something completely different.
Happy times are in store as This Way Out's John Dyer V sets the table and lights the Shabbat candles for an Israeli-American horror comedy.
Michael Mayer is an award-winning playwright, theater and opera director, and filmmaker. He is probably best known for his Tony Award-winning direction of the 2007 musical Spring Awakening. His many other successful Broadway directorial projects include Thoroughly Modern Millie, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and the revival of Lamford Wilson's Burn This. A number of Mayer's projects cover gay themes, as well as stories of disaffected characters trying to break through overwhelming obstacles, both external and internal. In his new and ironically titled film, Happy Times, out director and co-producer Mayer presents an assortment of seemingly successful characters that are all revealed to be deeply disaffected in some way or other. To say they all pay the price for their dissatisfaction is an understatement. And this story that begins as a caustic and comedic observation of a modern Israeli-American family group celebrating Shabbat dinner at a Brentwood mansion ends up looking more like the bloody end of a Shakespearean tragedy. The brilliance of Happy Times is that the laughs shockingly continue even as the blood pours forth.
Alan, Yossi, Sigal.
Bang, bang!
Bang, bang!
How much time did you
Oh my God, I love this song! Turn it up!
The Jewish Sabbath, or Shabbat, begins at sundown on Friday and lasts until sundown on Saturday. Hosting this ill-fated Friday night dinner with extended family and friends are the rugged and possibly shady Yossi, ably played by Edo Moore, and his alluring and most capable wife, Sigal, wonderfully portrayed by Liraz Chamami. As the hungry party members arrive, it doesn't take long for their various tensions and resentments to surface. The witty and barbed dialogue switches seamlessly between Hebrew and English, and this incredibly attractive cast of characters soon reveals their inner darkness. Michael Aloni as the struggling actor cousin with big ambitions, and Steffi Selma as his new girlfriend, are a gorgeous couple who appear to have it all, but only one of them will get away before all hell breaks loose. Aloni also starred in Michael Mayer's 2012 gay drama, Out in the Dark. Some of the other dinner guests, adding their own simmering pots of unresolved emotion, include the envious parents of schoolmates to the host's children, the immature and rudderless young Israeli man newly arrived to America with the hair-trigger temper, and a late-arriving and most unfortunate rabbi who just won't take the hint that he should leave post-haste. The relatively large cast means that character development is more sketched in, and when the first act of violence occurs, it is not long before much more follows, and one is almost reminded of the Who Will Get It Next succession of murders popularized by Agatha Christie's classic And Then There Were None. There are some forced moments, like a later exchange with two cops who come to the door after receiving reports of gunshots, but by this point, the movie has become a kind of Grand Guignol ballet of punches, stabbings, and electrocution. You'll never look at a kiln in quite the same way after viewing this story.
Thank you.
The cinematography and production design are first rate, along with the harrowing stunt work and special effects. And the music, by Guy Ayal, perfectly sets up the high-end mayhem to come. The screenplay by Mayer and Ayal, murderous violence aside, is clearly based in some personal experience, as the zinger lines traded at the beginning are just too well lived in so that anyone with a big extended family could recognize the painful emotional dynamics. Production design by Michael Fitzgerald is right on the money, so the beautiful house we start the evening with eventually leads to a series of room-by-room cat-and-mouse scenes, and we are firmly located in a believable space at all times. If you are looking for something, as they say, completely different, you'd be well-served to check in on Happy Times. Just be glad this isn't your extended family, or your goose might end up cooked, and not in the good way. Happy Times is available online at the Vimeo website. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
I'm Kate Clinton.
I'm Cleve Jones, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
An informed community is a strong community.
This Way Out's Stephen Sims is back with another queer music focus, but we wish it was for a happier occasion.
Oh, listen to the music. Oh, listen to the music all the time.
On Saturday, January 30th, I awoke to news that Grammy-nominated Scottish musician Sophie had died in an accident in Athens. When I told my producer I wanted to do a segment in honor of her, his response was, "Who?" His response could not have been more perfect. From my experience with Sophie, was you either knew her and her influence, or you had no clue who she was. This is Immaterial, off her Grammy-nominated album Oil of Every Pearls on Insides. Sophie was born in Glasgow in 1986, and as a young child, Sophie's father played cassettes of electronic music in the car and took her to raves. I was shocked for what did I say, and your voice exactly the same. And it makes me feel, oh, just like you never said goodbye when you spoke to me that way. The UK label Transgressive's statement about Sophie's death was in its own way as beautiful as she was. It read, "Tragically, our beautiful Sophie passed away this morning after a terrible accident. True to her spirituality, she had climbed up to watch the full moon and accidentally slipped and fell." This is the Autechre remix of BIP, released in the summer of 2020. While Sophie had been making music for a while, her first critical success came with the 2013 release of BIP. In regards to her music, Sophie stated back in 2015 that she never wanted any remixes made of her songs unless it was done by Autechre. Lemonade. This is Lemonade, released as a single in 2014. It polarized critics and was one of the top singles of the year. Lemonade even caught the ears of McDonald's, which used the song in a 2015 television ad. This is the song Hard, the B-side of Lemonade. Rather than being self-serious, which is sometimes the perception of electronic music, it had an oddball humor with a juxtaposition of opic and voice. I just got so hard. Hey, cutie! In 2014 also brought Hey Cutie, a short-lived project with members of the British electronic music collective PC Musichead, which included A.G. Cook and Hayden Francis Dunham. Sophie's sound was reaching even the mainstream and caught the ears of Madonna. Madonna collaborated with Sophie for her 2015 album Rebel Heart, notably on the song Bitch, I'm Madonna, which included Nicki Minaj. Let me run. This is 2016's Vroom Vroom. Sophie collaborated with Charlie XCX on this EP of bubbly tracks titled Vroom Vroom. Those sucks, no, they can't catch me. So let's ride. Sophie next ventured into a rap collaboration with Vince Staples on his 2017 album Big Fish Theory. On Saturday the 30th, after hearing of her death, Vince reflected on Twitter, "Sophie was different. You ain't never seen somebody in the studio smoking a cigarette in a leather bubble jacket, just making beats, not saying one word." Sophie next collaborated with Jimmy Eager on this song, Metal. It was released last summer and will be on Jimmy's upcoming February 26th album, Cheetah Bend. One of Jimmy's favorite memories of Sophie was meeting her in London. He says, "Your aura was as big as the moon, and you were shy, and we immediately became friends." My face is the front of shop. This is Face Shopping off of Sophie's album, The Oil of Every Pearl's on Insides. JaniceRoseOfVice.com writes, "Tracks like Face Shopping embrace body modification and plastic surgery as a form of self-determination, an undeniably trans narrative." The voice in Sophie's Is It Cold in the Water is Montreal singer Cecil Believe. Writer Mark Richardson says of Is It Cold, "We get a sense of a desperate moment, some kind of turning point in this person's life, perhaps something they're contemplating as they stand at the edge of a precipice." One fan says of the song, "The line, 'I'm freezing,' makes me feel seen." This is It's Okay to Cry, the lead single off Sophie's Grammy-nominated album, The Oil of Every Pearl's on Insides. I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but I think your inside is your best side. Oh, hi, was that a teardrop in your eye? I never thought I'd see you cry. Just know this is Pretending, another song off Sophie's album, The Oil of Every Pearl's on Insides. During the next full moon, take a moment, think of Sophie, and imagine a world where we see everybody as they wish to be seen. For This Way Out, I'm Steve Sims.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Job Wenline and Paul Thomas, produced by Brian DeShazer, John Dyer V, and Stephen Sims. Some of the music you heard this week came from the musical Annie and from Sophie. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets funded the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, a bequest from Christopher David Trentum, and donors John Beaupre and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2RRR, Gladesville, New South Wales, WSUN, Madison, Wisconsin, CHMA, Sackville, New Brunswick, and a wide array of community, terrestrial, and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.